A very good afternoon to you. You are listening to The Property Show, and it's my absolute pleasure to have in the studio Ludmila Yumalova, Managing Partner of HPL Yumalova and Plefka Legal Consultants. And we're joined by the lovely Mike Small, Partner at VSM Consulting. Mike, good to see you.
Thank you very much.
Had a busy couple of 2 weeks, have we?
We have a bit. Yes, I shot to the UK for a week and joined up with some old colleagues, and we went to Cheltenham Races, would you believe, which was fabulous.
Wow.
Been there for 12 years, so it was a great break.
Well, you must be getting excited then this weekend coming up.
World Cup, yes, followed it all year because I'm a great racing fan.
Yeah.
So I've been to each of the Maydan meets and most of the Jebel Ali ones. So,
yes,
looking forward to it.
So you'll have some inside information, because I believe that Dubai Eye will be broadcasting on Saturday at the track.
Oh, you will.
And I'm freaking out a little bit there, Mike.
I should have played some free tickets there, shouldn't I?
Well, it's 12 till 2, the broadcast that I'll be doing.
Right.
And what am I going to wear? What am I going to wear?
You'd have to come and see my wife.
It's a huge, huge dilemma. One week to go.
Listeners,
no, but you know, you've got to stay around and be fabulous a little bit. So that's my challenge.
You look fabulous anyway.
No, so I'm hopefully we're going to be talking to some local people, fashion designers and milliners. So we'll be getting them out on the track. So that'll be good. So why don't we were talking before the news about the shoreline maintenance fees and the kind of dilemma of will it go through, will it not, what does it mean, what does it not mean. Just finishing off with that article there, Ludmila, where does this leave the homeowners associations? Is it a matter of them now becoming toothless tigers as far as what they will be able to do or not?
Oh, well, very much so. And also, obviously, there will be a question as to whether the associations would actually be willing to sign this document. I mean, this is the document that was presented to them by RERA, but I'm not aware of whether the board members actually are signing on to it.
Mm-hmm.
Also, you know, the way the language is drafted in this particular declaration is also quite dangerous for the board members to sign on to, because it all of a sudden, in that the last provision all of a sudden refers not only just to the board members' conduct, but also the owners' associations at large, which means that by signing this document, the board members may be liable for the actions of any of them, of the owners.
Right.
You know, who are not part of the board, and vice versa. You know.
So if the owners are on Facebook putting information not directly through the homeowners association or through the board.
Exactly.
On their own.
Right.
So the board members could be responsible for that.
The board members could be responsible, and also the members themselves, the homeowners themselves could be responsible.
Mm.
So it's kind of a vice versa. So that's very, very broad. And to be honest with you, I think it's sort of unmanageable and unreasonably broad.
Mm-hmm.
I guess what remains to be seen is, if the associations will actually sign on to it, and what RERA's take on is going to be, and whether there's any sort of room for amendment.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I would imagine that until this document is signed, this will be yet another reason for why the associations, where the registration associations, is being delayed.
Mm-hmm.
I speculate that that's probably going to be the next sort of course of discussions, is that, you know, it's the owners' association's possible refusal to sign this document may be used as justification for the delaying of registration of the homeowner associations.
Mm-hmm.
So you know what that means, we don't know. I guess that's just an area to be monitored, but it is quite alarming, because
mm-hmm.
basically it sort of, you know, in today's day of communication, we live very public lives, and you know, basically this particular clause will be violated no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it's so broad.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, I do hope that you know, whoever's responsible for this would be able to amend
mm-hmm.
to make it a little more meaningful.
All right, well, let's shift gears a little bit and start and looking at the service fees. We've received a couple of text messages in from M1 owner. Just received service fees for Meadows 1. How could they go up by 40% from stable fees charged for the last 9 years? What can owners do?
Right, and so this is basically relates to
that's interesting, because stable fees for 9 years, so that for 9 years they've had fees that haven't gone up.
I think that's sort of how I read this message, is that which doesn't surprise me, because the issue of service fees has become an issue really just in the last year, and yet there are a lot of developments out there that have been around for much longer, such as the Meadows and the Lakes, and you know, until recently the owners have not really complained about the service fees being egregiously high. So it sounds like, at least from this message, that even those developments are now being affected,
mm-hmm.
and the fees are being increased rather significantly, you know, 40%. I mean, it's a very, you know, it's a very high jump.
Well, it's a big jump, but considering if they've had service fees that have been stable for 9 years, perhaps it's a catch up.
But it does. It all depends on how the service fees were calculated to begin with. You know, it doesn't. Fees don't have to increase with time. You know, if you have if a sufficient percentage of the fees goes to the reserve fund, then you know that fund with every year that fund actually grows bigger and bigger and bigger. So as the development ages and there are maybe more substantive repairs and maintenance issues that need to be taken care of, you know, the fund, the reserve fund, should be a lot bigger by that time, and therefore there should be sufficient funds in the association's reserve fund to take care of those repair issues.
Mm-hmm. It does depend, doesn't it, on what. It's the transparency issue again, isn't it, Ludmilla? It's whether or not you can justify those fees, because if they haven't moved for 9 years, then you'd think that 40% over 9 years isn't outrageous. You'd think it was pretty reasonable, given the inflation that the city went through over those 9 years.
Well, and I think that's a great point. You're right, Mike, because, I mean, if they've been able to, you know, if whoever the developer or the management company that had been charging those fees, if they had been able to charge those fees for the last 9 years and survive, I mean, that's probably representative of, you know, what a truly cost to run the development, because nobody would be running it for 9 years if they were in the red all the time. So they must.
You wouldn't expect them to, would you?
Right. No. So therefore, you know, that could be maybe a little more sort of a reasonable gauge as to, you know, what the service fees should really be. Mm-hmm. And that sort of brings me to a couple of articles that were again published in the last week. You know, one from the Express and one from the National. And there have been a few surveys done by various industry experts. And so for the first time, we're seeing some kind of, you know, figures that are based on statistical analysis, you know, of what these fees really are, you know, and how they're broken down and, you know, what sort of types of services they go to cover. And so the article in the National of a few days ago makes a statement that apparently 39%, at least, you know, this is one quote, the 39% of the service fees actually go to pay for utilities. And that means for district cooling and D1. Just that's, you know, that's 40%. Also, and we, the article from the Express actually quotes that figure to be 50%. And actually, from my personal experience as well, we've seen that our, you know, our clients who basically are, you know, part of these associations, that, you know, it's 50% of the service fees tend to go to just utilities, to cover utilities. I mean, what does that tell you? So it's 50%, and then going back to the National article, and then 39% goes to maintenance, 9% goes to management services, 6% to master community fees, and 6% to master community fees and a reserve fund. So it's only 6% for both, and 2% for insurance. So if you look at this, I mean, that's, you know, I mean, there are all sorts of issues. I mean, first of all, 40% to 50% for utilities. I mean, that's, you know, that's half of the service fees. I mean, is that really reasonable? And we'll get to that later. And then, you know, or 49% to maintenance. I mean, what is that? I mean, these are brand new buildings. You know, why would 40% go to maintenance? What are these maintenance issues? And what we've talked about in the past is that, you know, according to a lot of reports, is that the maintenance issues are really not maintenance issues. These are issues that should have been resolved before the buildings were being handed over. A lot of these maintenance issues, they refer to the knickknacks, you know, in parking garages and installing security systems in parking garages. These are things that were supposed to be finished before the development was actually handed over. But because of the crisis, you know, and the sort of the crunch and all that, you know, a lot of developers rushed to hand over these buildings before they completed, you know, fixing these sort of things that maybe, you know, were perceived not essential, and, you know, but you know, it's because they basically ran out of money. And
well, they didn't have a reserve at that point to carry on those,
right.
So they're using the actual service
fees.
Well,
they're not supposed to have a reserve. Yeah. You know, yeah. Those kind of issues should have been paid for from the purchase price.
No, quite, yeah.
But by that time, you know, that, you know, basically the purchase price or whatever the funds that had been collected towards the purchase price had already been used up, and so developers basically try to cover up these sort of non-essential issues to hand over the buildings, and then we're finishing them up with now, you know, what they call the service fees and the, you know.
So it all comes back every time to transparency, doesn't it? What is it explain it, show it, and then we can justify it. And if we can't justify it, we need to examine it.
And then right. you can make decisions, informed
yeah,
decisions,
absolutely,
and you
yeah.
can understand
absolutely,
why the yeah. bills are going yeah. up by 40%. Yeah. We've got another text message in from listener Nikhil at Gardens added, as of last November, the air conditioning to the Dewa bill, which was not the issue before. A lot of people are now having bills from 800 to 1,000 dirhams rising to 2,000 2,500. Can they do that? And is there any law for that, I guess, to protect the consumer?
And we've seen this, I think, from Jumeirah Park Islands, or in one of those developments recently. You know, their district cooling fees have tripled, you know, in the last month or two. So, yeah, I mean, these sort of increases have occurred in the past and have occurred alarmingly, a little too common. And then in terms of whether that's legal or not, I mean, it's happening. Whether it's legal, that's difficult. It's basically, there is no law that says one way or the other, and mm-hmm. that's the problem. Actually, there is, if you look at the strata regulations, there are some provisions that refer to the increase in service fees is only allowed to be X percent, which is normal because, you know, owners have to kind of budget. For basically any sort of increases, but there isn't really anything in the law that says, you know, that these kind of utility services cannot be increased by X percent, or there's some sort of a cap, unfortunately. And so, as far as, you know, anything in the law, there is nothing helpful there that we can rely on. Mm-hmm. But these are sort of issues that associations, for example, could address if that, you know, with the utilities directly, if they were actually properly formed legal entities. And that brings me back, you know, this is with this kind of interim or transitory state of associations. They are, as you said, does the sort of toothless tiger, and it's exactly because of that. Because if they had the legal status to bring these issues collectively, then they could address them directly with whatever the utility provider that may be, the contractor, the developer. They could file cases in court, and have the judge maybe adjudicate these kind of issues. But until they are formed formally, you know, they cannot even do that. I mean, and this is why even this being registered with RERA is not going to allow associations to file a case, for example, in Dubai courts, to have the judge, you know, review these particular issues and decide one way or the other, because mm-hmm. under the UAE law, collective actions are not allowed. And that means that, until you have a company, so to speak, mm-hmm. The association is just, basically a member or a group of people,
yeah.
and they cannot bring any sort of action collectively themselves.
Well, I think it is also worth noting that out of the Express article, the RERA, the quotes from the RERA chief, Marwa bin Galita, his comments about, you know, companies with, you know, issuing poor services, claiming they were flooded, increasing number of complaints, those kind of concerns that he's concerned about, these increase in complaints and poor services offered by facilities management companies. Companies in certain areas, but there are some numbers, some square feet numbers of charges
and
the increases.
Yes,
and I think it's worth kind of mentioning those areas and going through some of those.
Indeed, yes, mm-hmm. because the fees basically now are so, the service fees are so high that they're eating into the rental yields. And so there's some interesting sort of numbers, for example, for the Discovery Gardens. The annual rent for one bedroom apartment in Discovery Gardens is around 38,000, but the service fees are 19,000.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, 50% of their rental yields actually go to just to the service fees. Also, in the International City, the one bedroom is about... is about 24,000, the rent for one bedroom, and the service fees are 12,000. These are quite significant.
Mm-hmm.
But then, there are some other developments, like the Sky Courts in Dubai Land, where the service fees are only 6,500. And it goes back to what Mike was saying, is that, you know, what does that tell you? So it is possible to run some of these developments, at a fraction of the cost. You know, mm-hmm. how is that possible? Is it because they're being subsidized, or is it because, you know, going back to transparency, you know, there are actually ways to minimize these sort of expenses.
All right, we need to go to a quick break. You're listening to The Property Show.